Right, the reading can be found on page 503 if you have got a Bible open. Mordecai persuades Esther to help. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning, and among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict of the annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain it to her. And he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has put but one law, that they be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back his answer. "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Then Esther sent his reply to Mordecai. "Go, gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. Then when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks.
So I was actually, this is unbelievable, going to ask you to turn to the people around you and talk about where you'd seen God at work this week. But we've kind of already done that, haven't we? So I'm going to ask you another question because I always think it's good to talk to the people around you. What is the most brave thing that you think you have ever done? What is the most brave, most terrifying thing that you have ever done? 20 seconds, go. Couple more seconds. Brilliant, brilliant. Anyone got anything that they'd like to share? Anyone want to show off about the terrifyingly brave things that they've done in their lives? Go on, someone, don't leave me hanging. Anybody? Skydiving, that's pretty brave, yeah. Are we not a brave bunch, do we think? I'm sure we are. You all look very brave. Not sure. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, so let's dive in with the beginning of the passage. It is fair to say that things are pretty bleak at the beginning of this chapter 4. Essentially, all the Jews have just been sentenced to death. Okay, it's like they're kind of like prisoners on death row, and they've got this time, and there's this set date, the 13th of Adar. I like to think that that's like, I don't know, the 13th of December or something like that. It might be, sorry if I'm wrong and people know. But so they know that they're going to die, except they've got this time where they're allowed to walk around freely and for the next few months knowing exactly when they're going to be killed. Now, Haman and King Xerxes, they're pretty nasty guys, really. And if you want to know a bit more about how all that came about, do go and check out Andy's sermon on the website from last week. So I don't know how you would feel in this situation. Is it a good thing that they've got extra time before they're all going to be slaughtered? Would it be better if it was just game over now? I don't know. Is it good to be able to process what's going to happen? Maybe a little bit further down the line, they might start thinking about how they're going to use this limited time left. If you were someone that knew the day that you were going to die, would you plan how you would say your goodbyes? Would you plan what would happen at the end of your life? Maybe you'd be concerned about what your last meal was. We hear, don't we, of prisoners on death row who get to choose their last meal. I wonder what you would have. Oh, pizza, Chinese, the list goes on. Not sure. Or maybe you'd be trying to hatch an escape plan. Would you think that you could con the king and all his men out of it and you'd get away with it? Or maybe even you'd convert so you weren't a Jew anymore and then you'd try and argue that you weren't going to be sentenced to death anymore. I don't know. Right now, though, it's too early for the Jews to be thinking like that. This is real, gruesome, brutal, horrible life for them. And their first response, obviously, is one of desperation, of mourning, wailing and crying, you know, beating their chest in anger and anguish, not knowing what's going to happen. And it says that they wear sackcloth and ashes. It was really kind of grubby. So I think it's quite important to note here at the beginning that this wasn't just something that Mordecai was going through on his own. This was something that millions and millions of Jews were all going through. They were all, it says in verse 3, that in every province, in every area to which the edict, that kind of order of the king came, that there was this distress. In fact, we don't even know if Mordecai knows that he was the reason why the Jews are all going to be destroyed. Does he even know that he's responsible for this? We don't know, it doesn't say. Because he refused to bow down to Haman, didn't he, earlier? And this is why this edict, this order has come about. But the Jews aren't busy looking for someone to blame and pointing the finger at them. They're united in their mourning and their grief. Isn't it funny how when bad things happen, we unite? I don't know if you felt that after the news this week, that we unite in response to terror and bad things happening. So it's like they've hit rock bottom. But I'd like to suggest that actually this was not a hopeless situation. We've talked a lot in weeks gone by about how God isn't mentioned in this book of the Bible, in Esther. But I'd like to say that just because he's not spoken about, that does not mean he is not there, or he's even thought about or acknowledged. So I don't know if any of you have ever read Pete Gregg's book, God on Mute. I really, really love that. I read it a few years ago. And something that I really was assured about from reading it was that just because you don't hear God doesn't mean that he's not there. Silence doesn't have to mean absence. And because you couldn't instantly think of where God has spoken to you, but I hope that if you believe in him, that you wouldn't assume that that meant he wasn't there. You might still hope that he was there, even though you might not have been hearing from him. So, where can we perhaps look a little deeper and find God in this passage? Something that I might like to call hidden hope. I'm afraid I've gone really cheesy. I've got 3 points, and they're all a bit alliteration. Don't know. So we're going to start off with hidden hope. Okay, so let's look at the signs. We've got sackcloth and ashes. Sackcloth is this kind of coarse black cloth made from goat's hair. I bet it was really itchy. It was worn with the burnt ashes of wood as a sign of mourning for personal or national disaster. And sometimes, a little clue here, as a sign of repentance or prayer for deliverance. For all we know, the Jews were using this in praying that God would see this response of theirs and save them from the evil Haman and his edict to have them all murdered. Maybe they were praying. Maybe that's what the sackcloth and ashes symbolise. Next up, fasting was mentioned a couple of times in this chapter. We get it both at the beginning and at the end. And fasting in itself isn't necessarily Christian or even particularly spiritual. But the well-known theologian John Piper says that among Christians, the definition of fasting over the centuries could be a temporary renunciation of something that is in itself good, like food, in order to intensify our expression of need for something greater, namely God and his work in our lives. So often the idea of going without, of fasting, is drawing attention to the need for something else. In this situation, God. So we often think of fasting alongside prayer. We talk about prayer and fasting. And that might suggest here that Mordecai and Esther and the other Jews who were fasting were also praying as well. They were seeking God. That's the next clue. And then I think the key moment in this passage, not to miss, is in verse 14. And it suggests that God's being, that he's there when Mordecai says to Esther, he says that relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. If she doesn't do her part, and we'll come on to that in a moment, that this is the greatest suggestion of belief in God in this passage. One of those, what did he just say? I don't know if you realized it when he said, oh, well, if you don't do it, someone else will. And he kind of just scrapes over it at that point, doesn't he? It's like, hang on a minute. Blink and you miss it. Movie, turning point kind of thing going on. And I think this is Mordecai's as clear as mud way of saying, if you don't help us, Esther, I know that God will. Well, you could certainly choose to interpret it that way. So I think it's fair to say that there are signs of this hidden hope, of God's presence kind of lurking underneath everything that's going on, that Mordecai isn't ready to give up yet, despite what looks like the inevitability of death. Now, I don't know, that might be something that we can understand and relate to as well. Probably not the reality of being sentenced to death. I don't think that's something that many of us here in Reigate are experiencing. But we do know that it is a reality for many of our brothers and sisters around the world, don't we? I don't know, though, closer to home, maybe you know someone who has got some really serious challenges to overcome, perhaps a really serious ongoing illness, maybe a difficult family situation, maybe under huge amounts of pressure at work or at school. But they so often, don't you sometimes know these people that so often, through all that, manage to find positives in amongst the difficulties of life. They manage to be encouraging people despite their own difficult circumstances. And someone whose nature brings positivity and a smile. Someone who perhaps because of their faith in God has more hope than they otherwise might do. So I think this hidden hope thing is there. So let's go on. When Esther gets in touch with Mordecai, this plan starts to come together. So Esther, when talking about the biblical person of Esther, people often talk about, yes, Esther's character. We want to know about Esther's character. So this is Esther. This is my Esther. This is my goddaughter Esther. She's 5 years old, and she's a real bundle of fun and energy and crazy. And I asked her mum during the week when I was prepping this if there were any particular reasons as to why they named her Esther. And my friend Claire said to me, she said, we wanted to call her Esther as the biblical Esther was brave and beautiful and saved her people by the strength of her faith. And given the faith, beauty and strength of character that our Esther, this Esther, has, I think we chose well, is what she was said. And I agree. I know that this godchild of mine is nuts, but wow, she is strong in character. And I think we can learn that from this biblical Esther too. There's a lot we can learn from her. And you might be thinking, okay, she's a queen in the Bible many centuries ago. She's plucked by the king after a year-long beauty pageant, and she's hiding her background, her identity. What on earth do we have in common with her? I hear you, but bear with, let's look at this. So, Esther has sort of kind of ended up in this position by accident, it seems. Certainly not of her own doing. She wasn't pursuing coming king. She wasn't looking for that greatness. And the circumstances happened around her, and she kind of went along with it. That's kind of up until now, but what about now? Much of this passage is a conversation between the two of them, Esther and Mordecai, with her kind of member of staff, eunuch chap, playing messenger as their secret conversation pans out. And we see in the beginning of verse 4 that Esther was so distressed to hear that Mordecai was in such a bad way, and she was really concerned for him. You know, her friend, her uncle, was outside the city gates wailing and weeping, and she didn't know why. She didn't really know what was going on, and she was worried. At this point, she didn't know about the evening order. So then Esther went on to find out about the plan to kill the Jews. When they got further into their conversation between Esther and Mordecai, it became apparent that Mordecai was asking her for help. He thought that she could go to the king and get him to change his mind. that she could save the day. But she was really worried about breaking the rules and going to speak to the king, Xerxes, and revealing it meant that all her cover was blown. She'd have to reveal who she was, that she was a Jew too, so she'd probably get killed. And she was probably going to get killed even for going and speaking to him as well, because that wasn't allowed. She was terrified. She did not know what was going on. She was scared. And I'd perhaps like to suggest here that Esther was, she was just a normal girl. She was simply normal, not supernatural. Simply normal, not supernatural. She was no superhero. She was no magician. She couldn't control the king. She had no power over him at all. She was no miracle worker. Or was she? There was no record of some big conversation between Esther and God where God told Esther what was going to happen, what she needed to do. There were no instructions about building an ark. There was no burning bush. There was no angels. None of that other kind of stuff that we've seen when God has communicated with his people in this way. But we get the suggestion, don't we, from Mordecai in verse 14, it's the kind of famous line in this book, that perhaps she was made for such a time as this. What does that mean? What did Mordecai mean? Well, it looks like Mordecai was suggesting that God was wanting to use Esther, that this was her moment to shine, her moment to stand up and be counted for, that God had placed her there in that very situation, in that very position, and he knew that she would become queen, and so she could play this part in saving his people. Esther didn't know this beforehand. She didn't go in order to do this, just where she found herself. And there's nothing either to suggest that Mordecai was in on God's plan before it all happened either. But he did have faith that she could make an impact where she was. For such a time as this, exactly where she was. So Esther was really just a normal girl trying to make an impact in the circumstances where she found herself. Now that sounds a bit more relatable, doesn't it? I don't know if you agree. That sounds like something we can get on board with rather than this queen being told to go and save the nation. That sounds tough. But just a normal girl trying to make a difference, that might be something we could get. I wonder if we can see situations in our lives where we're able to have an influence, where we're able to work for God where we are. Whether if we think about what we're called to do day in, day out, if we just think about family lives and work situations and the playground and at church and in our communities and the supermarket, how can we have influence where we are? How can we be people of influence, of God's influence? So Esther took up this challenge and decided that she'd go. And Mordecai, just as Mordecai had asked, and she went to see the king, even though it was against the law. She'd probably get killed, no big deal, right? And that was probably no easy decision. She was really putting her life on the line here. She really was. Verse 16 said, "If I perish, I perish." This was a reality. It wasn't that she was just going to come away and look a bit embarrassed. She would be killed. The likelihood was that she would be killed, game over, nothing more. But she was willing to give that a go for such a time as this, just at that suggestion that for such a time as this was her moment. But I think there's another suggestion if we read between the lines here, I think, of God's presence. She doesn't up and go right then and say, okay, yep, here we are, off I go to see the king. She says, she waits, and she says, I'm going to fast. And remember what we said earlier about fasting and praying. So maybe she said I was going to pray as well. And for 3 days this time as well. I don't know, this is just pure my speculation, but I wonder if there's something in that. We often see numbers repeated in the Bible, don't we? And after all, Jesus was dead for 3 days before the miracle of his resurrection. And so maybe this waiting and praying, perhaps, and fasting for 3 days was all kind of part of it. Don't you love how the Bible's got all these parallels? So we finish this chapter knowing that Esther has decided to give it a go. She's going to go and see the king. She's going to brave it and see if she can help save the Jewish people. And I'm afraid I've got to leave it there and leave you on a cliffhanger for next week. And you'll have to come back and listen to Martin to find out what happens, whether she was successful or not. But I think the key point here is not whether it was successful or not, but it was whether she was willing to get involved, whether she was willing to get her hands dirty, perhaps answer the call of the unmentioned God in this passage that Mordecai had hinted at when he said, "For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place." Mordecai believed that Esther wasn't their only hope, unlike Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars. She wasn't their only hope. He knew that God would show up and do what was needed. He believed that if she remained silent, there would still be relief and deliverance for them from somewhere else, probably from God, if she didn't do what was needed to save his people. But he had also placed Esther, God had also placed Esther there to play her part if she would only obey and get stuck in. This normal girl who'd ended up as queen may have been terrified. She may have been afraid, but she found bravery, real bravery, and decided to become this active agent and play her part. She wanted to be on God's team and do her part for him. Oh, and now I'm wishing that I'd found that Christmas carol that said, I will do my part. That's brilliant. Anyway, firstly, what did she do? Firstly, she got informed, okay? I don't know about you, but I can watch the news and I think, oh gosh, I know there's all this terrible stuff going on in the world, but do I really know what's going on? Do we really find out what's happening in these terrible situations, or do we just sit there kind of really passively watching it going, gosh, isn't the world in such a bad mess? Do we know our stuff? Do we know what's going on? Are we informed? Mordecai made sure that Esther was informed, that she had all the facts about what was going on, about the Jews being sentenced to death. So that was the first thing, get informed. And then she gathered support around her. So she got her maids and her staff around her, and she sent messages to Mordecai to do the same, to gather with other Jews. I think that's so important. If we're going to get involved, let's not do it on our own. Let's not do it on our own. Let's do it with other people. Let's tell other people. Let's get support from other people. Look at the people around you. Who are the people that you go to for encouragement, for support, for prayer, for wisdom? Let's get support around us. Let's gather people around us. You might be able to interpret her 3 days of fasting as seeking God in all of this as well. I think that's so important, isn't it? We don't go, oh yes, I'm off to do this, here we go. Let's check in with God. Let's make sure that we're seeking him through whatever it is that we're called to do. And then she got ready to act, and she got stuck in, and she went to see the king. What a challenge for us. We know that God doesn't need to use us in his world. He is more than capable of bringing around his salvation action plan. He is all-powerful. He doesn't need us. He can do everything that he needs to be done to save his people. But he chooses to include us. He chooses to include Esther here, and he chooses to include you and me in our lives today. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that such a privilege? God chooses to use us. I just want to share a quick encouragement that I had a couple of weeks ago when I was at the New Wine Leadership Conference that's been mentioned a couple of times. One of the things that I kept hearing was that the work that God is doing in us is as important as the work that God is doing through us. So he is wanting to invite us to step in and do this work with us. And it's not just, oh gosh, I better go and do this thing because God wants me to. What an amazing opportunity to receive from God. To grow. He wants to grow us. He wants to develop our character. Remember that Esther grew into her role. She wasn't instantly, yes, I can be queen. She wasn't instantly, yes, I can save our people. She was scared. She had to be equipped. She had to take time and check whether it was the right thing. Her character grew. And perhaps we can learn from her. Perhaps we might want to be more like her and ultimately more like the best role model that we've got in Jesus. I wonder if you're up for that too. I'm just going to ask Joe and the band to come up as we get ready to worship again. I wonder, why don't you just take a moment just to have a think about what are your circumstances, your daily life circumstances? It might be that God is calling you to stand up and move halfway across the world and go and do some crazy other thing or something in the future. But actually, what about right now, right here, for such a time as this? What is God calling you to in your life? What are your front lines in your life? Do you want to be used? Are we ready? Are we going to put our hands up and say, God, count me in. I want to be part of this. Use me, equip me, show me how to help. Are we willing to give it all for him?